It's Friday, June the 26th, day 97, and I've still got laryngitis. I've been looking at some statistics about data traffic across the internet today, and was suddenly reminded of my own naivete, which is always good for the soul. But to explain it, a bit of personal history is needed. I have been fascinated by digital technology almost since it first arrived. Actually, even before that, because as a kid I bought a transistor. Note that, a single transistor, which I bought for a radio kit I was building. Just for comparison, the Apple A13 chip that powers my iPhone 11 has 8.5 billion transistors. In appearance, my transistor was a tiny metal canister about a quarter of the diameter of a dime coin. And of course I was using it as a component in a thoroughly analog device, my half-assed little homemade radio circuit. Later, as an engineering undergraduate, I was allowed to use the department's IBM 1401 computer, which in the business was regarded as the Model T of the computing industry, and was immensely popular with medium-sized businesses. It even used punch cards, and you could rent one for $2,500 a month, which, by the way, is about $22,000 today. So, digital technology and I go back a long way. When the personal computer arrived, I was an enthusiastic evangelist. My first one was an Apple II, the first in a long line of Apple machines I've owned and used. And I was blown away by the internet when I discovered it in the 1980s. In the 1990s, after the arrival of the web had awakened the world's interest in the network, a very posh broadsheet newspaper editor said to me one day, in the superior tone employed by landed aristocrats when talking to their gardeners, "Don't you think, dear boy, that this internet thingy is really just the citizen band radio de nos jours?" And I remember thinking, "You poor sap, you have no idea what's coming." And then I thought, how could he? Nobody knows where this stuff came from. Which is what motivated me to write my first book, On the Origins of the Internet. The internet was conceived and designed and built by my generation, the baby boomers. I know a few of them personally, and we're all around the same age. And I think that most of us felt that what these engineers had built was almost magical. A communications network that was truly global, that was owned and controlled by nobody, which was also inherently empowering and democratizing. Because of the internet, anyone could be an innovator, simply because the barriers to entry were so low. Anyone could be a publisher, because if you could type, you could blog, and so on. So whereas the Bible for the old analog world was Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations, the Bible for the internet age was Jochai Benckler's magnificent tome, The Wealth of Networks, published in 1996, when the web was just getting going. Just to take one illustration, the pre-internet media ecosystem was dominated and controlled by print publishers and broadcast networks. Broadcast means few to many, so the paradigmatic consumer of content in the TV-dominated age was the couch potato, a passive recipient of whatever the editorial gatekeepers decided to provide him with. TV was thus what used to be called a sit-back medium, but, so we thought, the web is a sit-up medium, and also it's a medium that allows you to exercise your own creativity and publish it to others. So we thought that we were going to see the extinction of the couch potato as a species. Now, with hindsight, of course, this was exceedingly naive. Evangelists usually are, and we techno-utopians certainly were. To appreciate the extent of our optimistic delusions, you only have to look at the data traffic across the internet any night of the week. Something like half of the data will consist of streaming media going to people who are watching movies on Netflix, Amazon, Apple, or a host of other services, plus YouTube, the iPlayer, and other TV catch-up channels. So instead of the net being the midwife of an explosion of user-generated creativity, it has in fact morphed into billion-channel TV. And the binge-watching couch potato, believe me, is alive and well. The story of how this happened is a long and interesting one. much too long for a 5-minute audio diary. But it has two major themes. One is about human nature, and the other is about corporate capture. And reflecting on it today, my conclusion was that I overestimated the creative capacity and appetites of my fellow humans, and I grossly underestimated the ingenuity and ruthlessness of tech corporations. So if the beginning of wisdom is recognition of one's mistakes, then maybe I've made a good start towards it.